I'm William Lee Adams, and this is What in the World from the BBC World Service. There have been protests in India for the last few days, with thousands of farmers taking to the streets. Many are clashing with police. On the outskirts of Delhi, police fired tear gas and plastic bullets to stop their advance on the capital, and they set up barriers and barbed wire to keep them out. But the farmers seem undeterred. Many have returned to the streets wearing masks, gloves, and safety suits to protect themselves from the shelling. You may remember the same thing happening in 2020 when dozens of people died during a year-long protest. Now authorities are worried about the violence repeating. So today I'm asking, why are farmers in India protesting and what's the solution? Later we'll head to Ghana in West Africa, where the government is set to introduce strong anti-LGBT laws. But first to the farmers in India. Their protests carry extra significance ahead of the general election in the spring. One farmer, aged 21, has died. Here to explain all the details is Rupsha Mukherjee, a BBC journalist in Delhi. Rupsha, hello.
Hello.
So we've been seeing some pretty dramatic images out of India with farmers marching through tear gas. How disruptive have their protests been so far?
There are very dramatic visuals, you know, that's coming from the protest sites where tear gas shells been fired on the protesters. The protesters too, you know, they have come on all guns blazing, like in terms of anti-riot gear and gas masks and very heavy machinery being used to kind of remove the barricading that's being done at the border points. All this is happening just a few months away from the general elections in India, which are very critical for the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party.
And for people coming to this topic cold, could we rewind a bit and explain why they're marching in the first place?
They are protesting, asking. There are several demands, in fact, around 10 to 12 demands. But the most important one is a legal guarantee for the minimum prices that the government pays to these farmers to procure their crops. Currently, the situation is such that the government provides minimum prices to procure just wheat and rice crops. So these farmers are asking for a guarantee for all crops, and you know, so that the farmer incomes are not subjected to volatility, be it global market prices or even weather patterns. They want better pension for farmers. That these other demands as well, but the minimum prices issue, I think that's the core of this protest.
In 2020, the government caved in and the farmers walked away with some of what they wanted. And we're now back in this situation. Is there a sense the government could cave in again?
From the looks of it in the last 2 weeks, it looks like the government doesn't want to completely brush it under the carpet. They are taking these protests very seriously. There are negotiators from the government who are constantly holding these consultations with the farmer leaders. There was a proposal that came from the government that they will ensure minimum prices for at least 5 crops for the next 5 years. However, this particular proposal was rejected by the farmer unions. Government is serious about this issue. They are aware that the farming community in the northern states of Punjab and Haryana, they are a powerful bloc politically. And any kind of repercussions of this on the ruling party's electoral prospects, they don't want that kind of situation to rise.
And you mentioned that farmers are a very strong voting bloc. How big of a role do they play in the economy?
If we see the Indian economy, then, you know, the 50% of the workforce in India, they come from the agricultural sector. So that's the kind of power, and also in terms of sheer numbers, that's what the rural economy, that's the importance of the rural economy in India. However, it's important to note that this particular protest, they're just spearheaded from the northern states of Punjab and Haryana, and also parts of western Uttar Pradesh in North India. So this is currently a very North India-centric protest. However, this Northern India, this is the belt that is a very important region for the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party because they get the majority share of votes in the national elections, in the last national elections from this particular region.
Could you give us a sense of whether farmers enjoy popular support? We know that politicians need them in elections, but the mainstream public, are they sympathetic to farmers and their plight at the moment?
So when this, the second round of these farmer protests, when they began on 13th February, you know, there was the general sense was there was a lot of traffic disruption. So people going to work, there was a lot of problems faced by them because of all these restrictions. However, you never know how the sentiment changes over time, because just yesterday, reportedly, a young farmer was shot and he was injured during the clashes, and then he eventually died. So we don't know how exactly that will play out in public sentiment. At the moment, even if you look at social media, there are all sorts of comments from especially pro-government commentators. There is also a sense that the government hasn't been very responsive to the plight of the farmers, especially after the protests. You know, they ended in 2021, and whether there has been enough progress on their grievances. There have been some commentators saying that there haven't been enough consultation happening with these farmer groups and their demands. So there are all sorts of sentiments flowing at the moment.
Listening to you speak just now, I get the sense of a cycle of, in a relatively short span of time, history is repeating itself. What's the solution? Is there a simple solution to bring this to an end?
The government is paying a good attention to what is happening. They don't want the situation to spiral out of control. I mean, we don't know what exactly, you know, whether there will be a middle ground, because how can a legislation be passed when there is not a parliamentary session underway and elections are nearby? Everything depends on how this protest goes in the next 2 to 3 weeks. If it gets very violent, the government might use it to say that, okay, these are a violent protest and they're not being peaceful, so they might not be wanting to come into the negotiating table. But if there is a sentiment and the sentiment goes in favor of the farmers, and if the federal government feels that this will have an impact on the elections based on their assessment, there might be some way where they'll try to placard their demands.
Rupsha, thank you so much for explaining that.
Thank you.
At the moment, negotiations between the unions and government are continuing. We're going to keep an eye on how it all pans out. Last time, the protest lasted a year, but with elections coming in the next few months, the government might hope to resolve it a lot more quickly this time around. Now to Ghana, where an anti-LGBT bill is close to being passed into law. Same-sex activity is currently illegal in Ghana, but this bill would increase the penalties. The United Nations has previously said the bill would create, quote, a system of state-sponsored discrimination and violence towards sexual minorities. Favor Nunu is a BBC journalist, and he sent us this voice note from Ghana's capital, Accra.
Ghana's parliament is actually trying to pass a bill that has been captioned the Human Sexual Rights and Family Values Act 2021. In short, this bill has been termed by the general public as the anti-gay bill or anti-LGBT bill in Ghana. The reason for the passage of this bill dates back to the year 2021, when an LGBT advocacy resource center was established in Accra to offer support systems to people or persons who identify as LGBT. Some members of parliament felt that this was going to interfere with the traditional family values of the Ghanaian, and as such introduced a private members bill that brought to the fore the anti-LGBT bill. As far as support is concerned, there's been mixed reactions from the general public. There are those who support the bill in its totality. However, there are also others in terms of individuals, people who identify as LGBT. You'd also find civil society and activists who are strongly opposed to the passage of this anti-LGBT bill that Parliament is currently debating and hoping to pass into law. What we know, though, is that in the event that this bill is passed by Parliament, it would have to travel to the President of Ghana, who would have to accept his signature for it to become law. Now, if this happens, it means that persons who identify as LGBT members in Ghana could end up in jail for 3 years. Also, those who engage in any form of advocacy for LGBT could end up in jail for 5 years.
Thank you, Favor. Now, let's talk about some numbers. Of the 193 United Nations member states, 63 criminalize same-sex relations, 31 of these countries are in Africa. And of these 31 countries in Africa, there are three where being gay can potentially lead to the death penalty: Uganda, Nigeria, and Mauritania. If you've been affected by any of the issues discussed in this episode, you should head to the BBC Action Line. The link is in the show notes. Thank you for listening to another episode of What in the World from the BBC World Service. I'm William Lee Adams. We'll catch you next time. Bye.